Today's community news makes conversation the great southern sounds of Melbourne, 88.3 Southern FM.
Classic Residences Brighton is a proud sponsor of 88.3 Southern FM.
Now, this week on the Space Show, we're going on tour with President Kennedy. Now, he inspired many, and none more than John Stewart. A member of the Kingston Trio, he felt emboldened and optimistic by Kennedy's vision of a new frontier. In 1962, Stewart wrote this song in celebration of the Kennedy era.
Some to the rivers and some to the sea, some to the soil that our fathers made free, then on to the stars and the heavens for to see. This is the new frontier. This is the new frontier.
During his presidency of the United States, John Kennedy made many memorable speeches. The Nixon-Kennedy debates made television history during the 1960 election campaign. The presidential inaugural address is still vividly remembered by those who heard it. Speeches on civil rights, the Cuban missiles, the Alliance for Progress, the New Frontier, and the Berlin Wall all followed. But two of his speeches are often heard today and are probably better known than any of these. On 1961 May the 25th, a mere 20 days after America's first tentative manned suborbital spaceflight, Kennedy stood before a joint session of Congress. In a strong and inspiring voice, he threw down the challenge to the Soviets and to the American people. An extract from what is now commonly referred to as the To the Moon speech is one of the most played clips of Kennedy speaking.
First, I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the earth. No single space project in this period will be more impressive to mankind or more important for the long-range exploration of space, and none will be so difficult or expensive to accomplish.
Congress approved Kennedy's vision, although a year later the enthusiasm for it was beginning to wane. On 1962, September the 12th, the president spoke at Rice University with an impassioned plea for support for Project Apollo. In doing so, he provided us with what is arguably the second most played quote from an 18-minute speech. 1 year on from Rice University, Kennedy is facing the 1964 election and the preceding Democratic Party primary campaign. As in 1960, if he doesn't take Texas, he doesn't get re-elected. That is why Lyndon Johnson became vice president. To shore up his Democratic Party support in Texas, a multi-city tour of the Lone Star State was planned for 1963 November. Many speeches were planned for the tour. Some were scripted to use space research and, specifically, the Apollo to the Moon project as inspirational themes. On this evening's The Space Show, we're going to focus our attention on these overlooked speeches. These days, all you are likely to see or hear about Kennedy's tour of Texas is the fateful drive through the centre of Dallas past the Texas Schoolbook Depository. During 1963, international negotiations were underway to set up a worldwide system of geostationary communication satellites. This would enable television, telephony, and data transmission around the globe. Setting up such a system had been one of the planks in Kennedy's speech to Congress in 1961.
Third, an additional $50 million will make the most of our present leadership by accelerating the use of space satellites for worldwide communication.
That system came to be known as Intelsat. In most countries, the signatory to the Intelsat system was the government post and telephone department. The United States didn't have a government telephony or television system, so they formed a quasi-private company called the United States Communications Satellite Corporation, to negotiate on behalf of the United States. On 1963, November the 20th, the day before he left Washington for his Texas tour, Kennedy received word that agreement on Intelsat had been achieved. He promptly issued the following statement about the result of the Geneva Radio Conference on Space Communications. It's read for us by John Gilbertson.
I received a report today from Mr. Joseph McConnell, chairman of the U.S. delegation at the recent Extraordinary Administrative Radio Conference on Space Communications held in Geneva by the International Telecommunication Union. This conference has been one of the most successful of its kind held in recent times. Mr. McConnell is commended for the outstanding leadership which he gave to the American delegation and for his many contributions to the successful conclusion of the conference. The conference allocated frequencies for communication satellites and adopted procedures governing their use, thus clearing the way for the establishment of an efficient global communications system. The conference also allocated frequencies for meteorological and navigational satellites, space research, and radio astronomy. This government and the United States Communications Satellite Corporation can now take practical steps in cooperation with other governments and foreign business entities to develop a single global commercial space communications system. It continues to be the policy of the United States that all countries which wish to participate in the ownership, management, and use of this system will have an opportunity to do so. Aside from the many political, economic, and social benefits, effective satellite communications can improve international understanding by providing a broad new channel for the flow of information between peoples. The many delegations which participated in the important work of this conference are to be congratulated on its successful outcome.
On 1963, November the 21st, Kennedy flew to Brooks Air Force Base in San Antonio to dedicate the Aerospace Medical Health Center. One must remember that the speech he made was delivered only 6 years after the first satellite was orbited and a bare 2.5 years after the first human orbited the world. In his opening sentence, Kennedy refers to the Secretary of the Air Force, that's Eugene Zuckert, and he refers to the Governor of Texas, John Connally, and Vice President Lyndon Johnson, and also Senator Ralph Yarbrough of Texas. Now, here is Kennedy's actual speech in full.
Thank you. Mr. Secretary, Governor, Mr. Vice President, Senator, members of the Congress, members of the military, ladies and gentlemen, for more than 3 years, I've spoken about the new frontier. This is not a partisan term, and it's not the exclusive property of Republicans or Democrats. It refers instead to this nation's place in history, to the fact that we do stand on the edge of a great new era, filled with both crisis and opportunity, an era to be characterized by achievement and by challenge. It is an era which calls for action and for the best efforts of all those who would test the unknown and the uncertain in every phase of human endeavor. It is a time for pathfinders and pioneers. I have come to Texas today to salute an outstanding group of pioneers, the man who manned the Brooks Air Force Base School of Aerospace Medicine and the Aerospace Medical Center. It is fitting that San Antonio should be the site of this center and this school as we gather to dedicate this complex of buildings. For this city has long been the home of the pioneers in the air. It was here that Sidney Brooks, whose memory we honor today, was born and raised. It was here that Charles Lindbergh and Claire Chennault and a host of others who in World War I and World War II and Korea, and even today, have helped demonstrate American mastery of the skies, trained at Kelly Field and Randolph Field, which form a major part of aviation history. And in the new frontier of outer space, while headlines may be made by others in other places, history is being made every day by the men and women of the Aerospace Medical Center, without whom there could be no history. Many Americans make the mistake of assuming that space research has no values here on Earth. Nothing could be further from the truth. Just as the wartime development of radar gave us the transistor and all that it made possible, so research in space medicine holds the promise of substantial benefit to those of us who are earthbound. For our effort in space is not, as some have suggested, a competitor for the natural resources that we need to develop the Earth. It is a working partner and a co-producer of these resources. And nothing makes this clearer than the fact that medicine in space is going to make our lives healthier and happier here on Earth. I give you three examples. First, medical space research may open up new understanding of man's relation to his environment. Examination of the astronauts' physical and mental and emotional reactions can teach us more about the differences between normal and abnormal, about the causes and effects of disorientation in metabolism, which could result in extending the lifespan. When you study effects on our astronauts of exhaust gases, which can contaminate their environment, and seek ways to alter these gases so to reduce their toxicity, you are working on problems similar to those we face in our great urban centers, which themselves are being corrupted by gases and which must be cleared. And second, medical space research may revolutionize the technology and the techniques of modern medicine. Whatever new devices are created, for example, to monitor our astronauts, to measure their heart activity, their breathing, their brain waves, their eye motion, at great distances and under difficult conditions, will also represent a major advance in general medical instrumentation. Heart patients may even be able to wear a light monitor, which will sound a warning if their activity exceeds certain limits. An instrument recently developed to record automatically the impact of acceleration upon an astronaut's eyes will also be of help to small children who are suffering miserably from eye defects but are unable to describe their impairment.
and also by the use of instruments similar to those used in Project Mercury, this nation's private as well as public nursing services are being improved, enabling one nurse now to give more critically ill patients greater attention than they ever could in the past. And third, medical space research may lead to new safeguards against hazards common to many environments. Specifically, our astronauts will need fundamentally new devices to protect them from the ill effects of radiation, which can have a profound influence upon medicine and man's relations to our present environment. Here at this center, we have the laboratories, the talent, the resources to give new impetus to vital research in the life centers. I'm not suggesting that the entire space program is justified alone by what is done in medicine. The space program stands on its own as a contribution to national strength. And last Saturday at Cape Canaveral, I saw our new Saturn C-1 rocket booster, which with its payload when it rises in December of this year will be, for the first time, the largest booster in the world, carrying into space the largest payload that any country in the world has ever sent into space. That's what I consider. I think the United States should be a leader. A country as rich and powerful as this, which bears so many burdens and responsibilities, which has so many opportunities, should be second to none. And in December, while I do not regard our mastery of space as anywhere near complete, while I recognize that there are still areas where we are behind, at least in one area, the size of the booster, this year I hope the United States will be ahead. And I'm for it. We have a long way to go, many weeks and months and years of long, tedious work lies ahead. There will be setbacks and frustrations and disappointments. There will be, as there always are, pressures on this country to do less in this area as in so many others, and temptations to do something else that's perhaps easier. But this research here must go on. This space effort must go on. The conquest of space must and will go ahead. That much we know. That much we can say with confidence and conviction. Frank O'Connor, the Irish writer, tells in one of his books how, as a boy, he and his friends would make their way across the countryside. And when they came to an orchard wall that seemed too high and too doubtful to try, and too difficult to permit their voyage to continue, they took off their hats and tossed them over the wall, and then they had no choice but to follow them. This nation has tossed its cap over the wall of space, and we have no choice but to follow it. Whatever the difficulties, they will be overcome. Whatever the hazards, they must be guarded against. With the vital help of this Aerospace Medical Center, with the help of all those who labor in the space endeavor, with the help and support of all Americans, we will climb this wall with safety and with speed, and we shall then explore the wonders on the other side. Thank you.
President Kennedy speaking at Brooks Air Force Base just one day before he died. From San Antonio, Kennedy flew 300 kilometers east to Houston. His first speech was to the League of United Latin American Citizens. It contained no references to space. Next step was to the Coliseum in Houston, where a dinner was being held to honor long-serving Representative Albert Thomas. Kennedy was able to use his after-dinner speech to highlight his administration's space achievements and to make Texans feel they were getting a good slice of the pie. In his speech, Kennedy overpraised Thomas's role in advancing the United States' space program. Now, the space show was unable to find a recording of the speech, so extracts are going to be read here in the studio by John Gilbertson.
When Congressman Thomas went to the House of Representatives in 1936, he did not confine his sight to a Texas of less than 6 million people, a Texas doing less than $500 million in manufacturing, a Texas in which 37% of its population lived on the farm. By 1963, that population had dropped to 7%. The population of this state exceeds 10 million. The value of your manufacturing has climbed to $6 billion, and Texas today is one of the 10 most highly industrialized states in the Union. Albert Thomas is old enough to dream dreams and young enough to see visions. There were in 1936, as there are today, those who are opposed to growth and change, who prefer to defy them and look back instead of forward. But Albert Thomas and those who work with him did not heed that view in the mid-30s, and this city, this state, and this country are glad that they did not. And we dare not look back now. If 27 years from now, in the year 1990, a new generation of Americans is to say that we, too, looked forward. His record serves his constituents, but it serves the United States. He has helped steer this country to its present eminence in space. Next month, when the United States of America fires the largest booster in the history of the world into space for the first time, giving us the lead, fires the largest payload into space, giving us the lead. It will be the largest payroll, too. And who should know that better than Houston? We put a little of it right in here. But in any case, the United States next month will have a leadership in space which it wouldn't have without Albert Thomas. And so will this city. He has been a stickler for efficiency in government, but he has also been for progress and growth. Many of the products and employers of this city and state were wholly unknown when Albert Thomas went to the House. Electronic machinery, sophisticated instruments, and preparations for the exploration of space. But those are the industries which helped this state reach its highest peak of prosperity in 1962, except for one year, 1963. In Texas and the nation, change has been the law of life. Growth has meant new opportunities for this state. Progress has meant new achievements. And men such as Albert Thomas, who recognize the value of growth and progress, have enabled this city and this state to rise with the tides of change instead of being swept aside and left behind. In 1990, the age of space will be entering its second phase, and our hopes in it to preserve the peace, to make sure that in this great new sea, as on Earth, the United States is second to none. And that is why I salute Albert Thomas and those Texans whom you sent to Washington in his time and since then, who recognize the needs and the trends today in the 60s, so that when we meet here in 1990, they will look back on what we did and say we made the right and wise decisions.
John Gilbertson reading President Kennedy's blatant pitch for the Texan vote. After the dinner, the Kennedys flew 380 kilometres northwestward for an overnight stay in Fort Worth. The next morning, on Friday, November the 22nd, Kennedy spoke at a rally in front of the Texas Hotel. Again, he referenced Texan role in space and their achievement in the aerospace industry. At the time, an aircraft known as the Tactical Fighter Experimental, or TFX, was being developed in Fort Worth. The TFX became well known in Australia as the F-111. That's the fighter bomber that did the burn and dump. You may have seen it with the flames coming out the rear. Again, the space show was unable to find any recording of these remarks. Solon FM's Tim Watson has recreated the speech especially for the space show.
What we are trying to do in this country and what we are trying to do around the world, I believe, is quite simple. And that is to build a military structure which will defend the vital interests of the United States. and in that great cause, Fort Worth, as it did in World War II, as it did in developing the best bomber system in the world, the B-58, and as it will do now in developing the best fighter system in the world, the TFX, Fort Worth will play its proper part. And that is why we have placed so much emphasis in the last 3 years in building a defense system second to none. Until now, the United States is stronger than it has ever been in history. And secondly, we believe that the new environment, space, the new sea, is also an area where the United States should be second to none. And this state of Texas and the United States is now engaged in the most concentrated effort in history to provide leadership in this area, as it must here on Earth. And this is our second great effort. And in December, next month, the United States will fire the largest booster in the history of the world, putting us ahead of the Soviet Union in that area for the first time in our history. This is the kind of strength the United States needs, economically, in space, militarily.
The rocket test promised for 1963 December was postponed until the following month. This was the first Block 2 Saturn 1. The Saturn Apollo 5 was the first two-stage Saturn. It was launched on 1964 January the 29th and placed 17 tons into low Earth orbit, far surpassing any mass the Soviets had launched. Late in the morning, Kennedy made a brief flight east from Fort Worth to Dallas. The plan was to drive from the airport through the city to the Trade Mart. Waiting there were many business and civic leaders expecting a luncheon speech from their president. After that, Kennedy was to have flown 300 kilometres south to Austin, where he would make a speech to the Texas Democratic State Committee. We all know that Kennedy was not fated to deliver these two speeches. Now, the space show was curious to know what Kennedy intended to say had he been able to keep these two appointments. We have been able to retrieve from the John F. Kennedy Presidential Library and Museum the scripts of the two intended speeches. The parts relevant to spaceflight are going to be read by Tim Watson. This is what the Trade Mart audience would have been told had the president not been shot 1 hour earlier.
I have spoken of strength largely in terms of the deterrence and resistance of aggression and attack. And that is also why we have regained the initiative in the exploration of outer space, making an annual effort greater than the combined total of all space activities undertaken during the 50s. Launching more than 130 vehicles into Earth orbit, putting into actual operation valuable weather and communication satellites, and making it clear to all that the United States of America has no intention of finishing second in space. This effort is expensive, but it pays its own way for freedom and for America. For there is no longer any fear in the free world that a communist lead in space will become a permanent assertion of supremacy and the basis of military superiority. There is no longer any doubt about the strength and skill of American science, American industry, American education, and the American free enterprise system. In short, our national space effort represents a great gain in and a great resource of our national strength. And both Texas and Texans are contributing greatly to this strength.
The appeal to Texans in that final sentence was, in some measure, justified. More than 1 year earlier, the Manned Spacecraft Center had been opened on the outskirts of Houston. And a few minutes ago, we heard Kennedy himself speak of the aerospace medical research being done in San Antonio. On the evening of 1963, November the 22nd, Kennedy planned to be in Austin to address the Texas Democratic State Committee. John Gilbertson reads the speech Kennedy had prepared.
3 years ago this fall, I toured this state with Lyndon Johnson, Sam Rayburn, and Ralph Yarborough as your party's candidate for president. We pledge to increase America's strength against its enemies, its prestige among its friends, and the opportunities it offered to its citizens. Those pledges have been fulfilled. The words spoken in Texas have been transformed into action in Washington, and we have America moving again. In Texarkana, I pledged in 1960 that our country would no longer engage in a lagging space effort. That pledge has been fulfilled. We are not yet first in every field of space endeavor, but we have regained worldwide respect for our scientists, our industry, our education, and our free initiative. In the last 3 years, we have increased our annual space effort to a greater level than the combined total of all space activities undertaken in the 1950s. We have launched into Earth orbit more than four times as many space vehicles as had been launched in the previous 3 years. We have focused our wide-ranging efforts around a landing on the moon in this decade. We have put valuable weather and communication satellites into actual operation. We will fire this December the most powerful rocket ever developed anywhere in the world. And we have made it clear to all that the United States of America has no intention of finishing second in outer space. Texas will play a major role in this effort. The Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston will be the cornerstone of our lunar landing project, with $1 billion already allocated to that center this year. Even though space is an infant industry, more than 3,000 people are already employed in space activities here in Texas. More than 100 million of space contracts are now being worked on in this state, and more than 50 space-related firms have announced the opening of Texas offices. This is still a daring and dangerous frontier, and there are those who would prefer to turn back or to take a more timid stance. But Texans have stood their ground on embattled frontiers before, and I know you will help us see this battle through.
Now let's take a listen to that speech again, as it may have been heard by someone in the audience. This recreation is by Tim Watson.
3 years ago this fall, I toured this state with Lyndon Johnson, Sam Rayburn, and Ralph Yarborough as your party's candidate for president. We pledged to increase America's strength against its enemies, its prestige among its friends, and the opportunities it offered its citizens. These pledges have been fulfilled. The words spoken in Texas have been transformed into action in Washington, and we have America moving again. In Texarkana, I pledged in 1960 that our country would no longer engage in a lagging space effort. This pledge has been fulfilled. We are not yet first in every field of space endeavor, but we have regained worldwide respect for our scientists, our industry, our education, and our free initiative. In the last 3 years, we have increased our annual space effort to a greater level than the combined total of all space activities undertaken in the 1950s. We have launched into Earth orbit more than four times as many space vehicles as had been launched in the previous 3 years. We have focused our wide-ranging efforts around a landing on the moon in this decade. We have put valuable weather and communication satellites into actual operation. We will fire this December the most powerful rocket ever developed anywhere in the world. And we have made it clear to all that the United States of America has no intention of finishing second in outer space. Texas will play a major role in this effort. The Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston will be the cornerstone of our lunar landing project, with $1 billion already allocated to that center this year. Even though space is an infant industry, more than 3,000 people are already employed in space activities here in Texas. More than $100 million of space contracts are now being worked on in this state, and more than 50 space-related firms have announced the opening of Texas offices. This is still a daring and dangerous frontier, and there were those who would prefer to turn back or to take a more timid stance. But Texans have stood their ground on embattled frontiers before, and I know you will help us see this battle through.
Emma Watson's resurrection of the final speech Kennedy would have made during his tour of Texas. Again, you'll note Kennedy was at pains to shore up Texan support for his presidency and his space vision. Well, history records that under the leadership of President Johnson, a Texan, the United States went on to successfully develop the Apollo project. However, it was during the presidency of Republican Richard Nixon that a dozen astronauts walked on the moon. The Space Show thanks the John F. Kennedy Presidential Library and Museum for providing access to its archives. We also thank John Gilbertson and Tim Watson for reading the Kennedy speeches. Indeed, more than reading, putting a lot of emphasis into it. And we thank Mark Kopolov, who gave valuable assistance, and we also thank lots of others who offered encouragement. Now, this program was researched, written, and produced and presented by Andrew Rennie. And we leave you with another song penned by John Stewart, John Stewart of the Kingston Trio. Now, whereas the New Frontier of 1962 had been upbeat and optimistic, this tune is a sad farewell to an assassinated popular president.
When you sit and wonder why things have gone so wrong, and you wish someone would tell us where our friend has gone. Look then to the hills when there's courage in the wind, and in the face of freedom and those who look to him. And search within the heart of every young man with a song, and then I think we'll know where our friend has gone. Summer takes the winter as the good years take the pain. There'll be laughter in the land again, but hearts won't be the same. And I know I'll remember when a chill wind takes the sky, and speak of years he gave us hope, for they will never die. And as we gaze at brave young men when yesterdays grow long, then I think we'll know where our friend has gone. Sit and wonder why things have gone so wrong, it's then that we'll remember where our friend has gone.
Online all the time. 88.3 Southern FM.